So this will be a little bit different mixture, a little bit the same amount of turbulence, I would say, but more astrophysics in this. So I need to first mention my collaborators, Sergey Ustyugov from Keldysh Institute of Applied Mathematics Moscow, helps with MHD simulations, and he developed a new MHD methods for strongly compressible turbulent flows. Mike Norman is the father of astrophysical jets, I would say. And so he now directs the San Diego Supercomputer Center. So we are interested in studying turbulent ISM. And so this picture shows you a few different images of Messier 31. This is the famous Andromeda galaxy. And so this panel shows the where the stars are, and these two show different infrared images that show you where the gas and dust is observed. And so you have these spiral arms full of bright new stars. And so star formation is active in those regions, and stars are forming in molecular clouds that you cannot see here because they are very tiny on a scale of about 20 parsecs or so. And the star formation activity basically feeds turbulence of the ISM in this disk of interstellar gas. If you look at more detail in the infrared, this is now pieces of our Milky Way galaxy. And so this is the Milky Way itself, and that is an image with Planck satellite recently sent into space. So you see a lot of small-scale structure, and that's the plane of the disk, and you partly see some stellar light, I think, here. And so then if you go deeper to smaller scales, so this is a Nigel Nebula located right there, and it's about 20 parsecs across. You still see a lot of structure, and there is no end to this. So this is usually interpreted as a turbulent cascade going from larger scales to smaller scales. What I want to discuss today is magnetized turbulence, and this is the what we see in the Milky Way. These little dashes show the direction of local magnetic field in those places. And so this, for example, cluster of dashes shows you the Taurus molecular cloud, the most well-studied, one of the most well-studied examples of where stars are forming. And so what we understand is, what we want to understand here is how those clouds form. And because it's very extremely difficult to measure magnetic field in those clouds and to understand what sort of turbulent component you have, how the field depends on the scale, we would like to try to model this process of cloud formation in the turbulent ISM from first principles. And we want to get synthetic molecular clouds that reflect what is really going on there. That would allow us to form stars from the right initial conditions. So that's that piece of astrophysics, which is important. We are dealing with, we are running simulations, and we are solving compressible MHD equations. And so these are just the... yes, it's provided by the numerical scheme. So I'm not putting in those terms because we don't know actually what they are. And so this is ideal MHD, but we are really solving non-ideal problem. And I mean, these are just conservation laws. So this is mass, momentum, flux, and energy. And the red part is astrophysics. The rest is all the same for all of us, I think. So this red part is heating and cooling. So this gamma function, which we assume does not depend on spatial variable, it's just a constant. It's the heating that is provided by ultraviolet radiation from stars. And this lambda term shows how radiative cooling, so this gas radiates photons and loses its energy due to that thing. And so this red astrophysical piece here, you see it's nonlinear, it's stiff, it's hard to integrate, and it creates various different interesting nonlinear effects. And I'm not going to talk about this stuff, but even if you take just a single zone model, if you just look at this term only and forget about all those equations, you can get nice bifurcations, phase transitions of the first order, and all this good stuff. So as an illustration, I will show you a little movie. Hopefully.
Phase transition depending on the value of gamma?
No, there is a different control parameter. I don't want to go into that because it's a different talk. Yeah. So, oops. Really? Okay, let's skip the movie. So, we don't have time yet. Okay. So, what it is supposed to show is that you can actually force turbulence if you change this gamma capital as a function of time. There is thermal instability that creates a two-phase medium. So, that is shown here in the left panel. So, blue stuff shows cold gas, and it's embedded into the warm gas, which is shown as red, and there is pressure equilibrium between those. But if you change the heating rate, the clouds get heated strongly than the rest because of the density dependence in that term, and so the clouds start to explode. And then if you turn down the heating rate, they implode. And so you can generate turbulence this way, just using the source terms in the energy equation. Okay. But that's a different story. So what I would like today to talk about today is we are using this forcing term in the momentum equation, and it's a large-scale solenoidal force which does not helicity. And so that steers the gas in the box, emulating the star formation activity nearby, and that supplies kinetic energy. This velocity generates turbulent component to the magnetic field. And there are lots of structures created, and those structures radiate energy. Okay. So what we want to do is we want to follow this system following Prigozhin's ideas. And so we want to look at self-organization in that system in order to get ideas of how this magnetic field is structured in the clouds and whether it is where in this turbulent medium it should be high, where it should be low, and so we want to find out what the properties of this magnetic field are. And so the system has certain thermal pressure that can be described like this, and heating and cooling, if they balance each other, then they set certain mean pressure in the box. And then there is a magnetic pressure defined by the magnetic field strength, and there are all usual things like turbulent beta and thermal beta that are known from plasma physics. So this is just the ratio of thermal pressure to magnetic pressure, or the ratio of dynamical pressure to magnetic pressure. And so just usual thermal beta shows you how strong is the magnetic field. If it's small, then magnetic effects are important. And turbulent beta shows the balance between motions in the gas and magnetic effects. Okay, so we want to develop this turbulence in a way that does not depend on initial conditions. And that would allow us to then conclude that, yes, we have molecular clouds that follow from this self-organization in MHD turbulence. So we are using numerical methods to solve this problem, and we are using PPML, piecewise parabolic method on a local stencil. There is a paper in JCP 2009 that describes the thing in detail. It's a high-order Godunov method. It is third-order accurate in smooth regions and second-order elsewhere on shocks, and it's also second-order accurate in time. It uses constrained transport, so that means that divergence of B is preserved to be zero to the machine precision. It uses multidimensional reconstruction, and it's a pretty low dissipation method, which is good for turbulence modeling. So these pictures here and there show the bandwidths of the method. We want to reproduce a longer, as big as possible, an inertial range here. So we care about choosing the method that allows you to do your best here. And I just want to advertise this new paper that has been accepted just yesterday. It compares 9 different MHD methods for compressible or supersonic turbulence. And this PPML appears to be one of the best, or maybe even the best of all 9. And so this comparison in particular includes Pluto code that is being used for jets. Never heard. You should know that. So in order to check whether we are getting real clouds, we want to satisfy, put in some astrophysical parameters and satisfy some constraints that we know from observation. And so the thermodynamics is given by the heating and cooling functions. And this plot here shows density versus thermal pressure. And this red line corresponds to rho gamma minus rho squared lambda equal to zero. This is equilibrium between cooling and heating. And that's where all the gas wants to see it. But this dashed part of this curve is unstable. And so this instability works because this region above the curve is cooling dominated. That is heating dominated. So if you have a parcel of gas here and you increase the density, then cooling will be stronger. And so temperature will go down and pressure will remain the same because of sound waves. And so basically if you start from here, you can go that way. If you start, if you decrease your density a little bit, then you will go that way and join the stable branch here. So this is called thermal instability, and that is why we are talking about clouds. These are different clouds, not like in turbulence. And so we also, when we say cloud, because this is a highly compressible turbulence, we also mean something like an eddy. So it's not clouds of droplets. It's a completely different thing. And so when we say multi-phase flows, we don't mean that there are two different phases that are mixed. We mean that there are thermal phases that correspond to those stable branches here and there. Okay, and then so we want to, if we put this heating and cooling physics is very well restricted, and so we basically know the shape of those functions that enter the right-hand side of the energy equation. But then we still want to introduce the force that corresponds to the given scale of the size of the box, which is 200 parsecs, roughly the scale height of the gas in the disk. And so we take this from observations. And so these are basically two inputs. And on the output side, we want to check whether the pressure distribution is right. And this is the observed pressure distribution from Hubble Space Telescope. And also we want to see whether the magnetic field measurements fit into right in molecular clouds. We can reproduce in the right way. So. So that's how we set this thing up. And so we start with, we first fill this box with gas at some min density, and then we turn on cooling and heating, introduce a little bit of density noise to start with. And so this structure is produced by purely thermal instability with no driving. And then we turn on driving shortly before this picture is taken. And that creates a lot of, you know, there are strong shocks here. And so what you see is basically the first caustics where converging flows create strong shocks. But then after some relaxation, you continue driving and you get sort of a statistical steady state. And so this, these two plot snapshots correspond to that statistical steady state, and you see molecular clouds as those yellow filamentary structures. That's basically what we are interested in, and we want to see what will happen to the magnetic field in those structures. So if you look at the density distribution, and these two plots show just a volumetric rendering of the very high density, you see a lot of structure. A small scale, not very well resolved at this resolution. This is sort of a pilot simulation that we plan to extend to much higher resolution soon. And so you see a lot of filaments, and these constitute the structure of those molecular clouds. If you look at the magnetic field structure, you can look at both very low magnetic field values and very high magnetic field values. So the left plot shows current sheets. This is where numerical diffusivity is active. So these are very low magnetic field regions. And so those represent basically two corrugated two-dimensional sheets with holes in them. And high magnetic field regions are shown in blue on the right-hand side here. It's a completely different morphology, and you see some localized very high fields that do not correlate with density. So these two panels show the history of the simulation. So the left panel shows different energies for three different models. Blue shows the kinetic energy. And so you see some initial growth due to the phase transition and formation of this two-phase medium at the beginning. Then you turn on the forcing, and kinetic energy goes up and saturates at a certain level. And then we have three different models with different uniform magnetic field that we apply at the beginning, and that is conserved all the time. And in depending on this, this red lines show those three models, and this is magnetic energy. So in model A, magnetic energy gets amplified to equipartition with kinetic energy. And we basically follow the evolution, and we collect statistics in this range where we get a statistical steady state. Now, on the right-hand side, you can see what happens to the magnetic field. And for example, these red lines, the two red lines correspond to the total field, the heavier line on top, and to the turbulent field. So turbulent field starts from zero, and then reaches about 14 microgauss at the end. So there is sort of a saturated state. There is a little growth that continues here. And so different models give us different values of magnetic fields in those boxes. Now, this is what happens when you use the heating and cooling function. And so that's again, this heavy black line shows the thermal equilibrium. And you see that the isocontrast show all the points within one snapshot within the box. And you can see that most of the gas is sitting here in the warm phase. but turbulence disturbs the thermal pressure dramatically. There is a three orders of magnitude difference here. And there is also a lot of gas in the cold phase on this table branch sitting here. And this point shows the initial conditions we choose for model B. So you don't see it here because this plot shows a volume fraction. It's about 50% of the mass in the box is concentrated in this cold stable phase. And this cold stable phase is what those molecular clouds are built of. This figure shows the density PDF in those three turbulent flows, and you can see that the PDF does not depend much on magnetization. The high density tail looks like a very good log normal, and this little peak here shows this is just the signature of the second thermal phase, which is the warm phase here. And this little peak that you cannot see is the cold phase. So if you reduce the driving force, you would see a bimodal distribution like this normally. But because the RMS velocity that we choose to match the observed properties of the ISM is high, then this valley disappears from this plot, nearly. And amazingly, we are able to match the HST data. That was not expected, actually. But you see, you can look at this black curve and the crosses. And amazingly, both the shape and the width of the PDF is matched just by magic. We didn't do anything to get there. No, we shift the curve too much because there are different normalizations in those things up and down, and that's all we do. So it's kind of nice result that tells us that we are in the right ballpark. Now, this is a two-dimensional PDF of density and magnetic field strength. And so we can see, again, this is where our data points are. And we can match the low density observations as well, rather in a good way. We don't have enough resolution to get to higher densities. So we end up at 10 to the 4 here. But there are a few points only. So we cannot really deal with this part. We need adaptive mesh refinement to move to this end, and we have done other simulations with magnetic fields and adaptive mesh refinement to cover that part of the plot. Now this is interesting stuff because we are now looking at isolines. This is a two-dimensional PDF of thermal pressure versus magnetic pressure for the statistical steady state in one of the models. And so we see that plasma beta is about 0.1. So overall, this gas in the box is magnetically dominated. And that corresponds to what is observed. And this colorful inlet here shows the same thing, but only for the cold gas that is colder than 100 Kelvin and denser than 100 particles per cubic centimeter. So this would mimic the molecular clouds. So molecular clouds, basically, in this diagram, see it at the same beta, plasma beta value as the rest of the ISM. But now the most interesting part is this. So here we plot the PDF for turbulent beta. And you see again, beta turbulent is close to one. That means equipartition. And that's what we've seen before when we looked at the magnetic and kinetic energy plots. So overall, the the whole mass is sitting at a good partition in the box. That's the maximum of this PDF. But the question is, what happens to molecular clouds? Where they are on this diagram? And it's really, it's hard to predict where you find them. So that's where they appear to be. So apparently, in this cold gas, which is also dense, turbulent beta is about 30. Oh, in this case, it's even higher. For model A, where we have a partition, it would be about 30. So that means that these molecular clouds in this self-organizing turbulence in the box are forming superalphenic. They have superalphenic turbulence. So you can read this out from this plot that shows the distribution of alphenic Mach number as a function of density. And so if you look at the dense stuff, which is denser than 100 particles per cubic centimeter, most of this gas is above alphenic Mach number of 1. So why is it happening? What's the physics of this? Why do we get molecular clouds that are velocity dominated? Kinetic energy is much larger than magnetic energy there. So the answer comes from the PDF of the cosine of the alignment angle theta, which is just B dot U over BU. And so we see that at low densities, there is a very strong alignment between velocity and the magnetic field. So most of the motion goes along the magnetic field lines. And when, in order to get high density molecular clouds, you need to have these converging flows that give rise to the density. And those converging flows always go along the field lines. And therefore, that explains the result. So the field is not amplified by compression. And so most of the cold and dense gas appears to be weakly magnetized. So do I still have? I think I need 5 minutes? OK. So we look at this plot shows the ratio of dilatational to solenoidal velocity power. So we take the velocity field for different models, decompose into dilatational and solenoidal velocities, and then take power spectra. So what this shows is that the degree of compressibility depends on the magnetic field strengths. The blue line corresponds to the model that has the weakest uniform magnetic field. And so it's more compressible than the other two. And so as you increase the magnetization in the box, you decrease compressibility. An interesting feature here is that usually when you use solenoidal driving, it creates a strong peak on large scales. That is where your rotation produces strong compressions because rotation is very fast. In this case, you don't get this feature. If your magnetization is strong enough, then you just don't get this feature at all. And so turbulence becomes weaker, less compressible here. These are probability distribution functions for different magnetic field components, and they have these fancy shapes. Some of them are peaked if the uniform field is small. This blue line has a wide, very very narrow peak, which is unresolved here, and this is the weak field case. In the strong field case, you develop a plato like this here. And that component that is parallel to the mean field is has an asymmetric distribution, which is unusual also. And I think this stuff is needed to help to interpret observations, because what we see is some type of average along the field of line of sight, and you need to know the distribution function to get ideas about the values, what this mean value correspond to. Now these two plots show the PDFs of absolute value of magnetic field in those three models, and you see that if in the weakly magnetized model, this blue one, you have a longer tail towards high magnetic fields, while in strongly magnetized model, the tail is lower. So this is sort of a paradox. If you want to have high fluctuations of magnetic fields, you don't want to apply a strong uniform field to your model. And the shape of this curve is, it looks like the right-hand tail at high magnetic field values looks like a stretched exponential. And if you use this time average data and plot them using the stretch index of 0.3, there is a fantastic fit here. You see, these are just data. And that's the straight line. And so you don't see any difference, actually. It just goes. And there are two models that can be fitted by the same power law here. They are just shifted vertically to match the same dotted line. And you see this this match covers about 15 powers of E. Right, so this is natural logarithm. So this is something we want to understand where it comes from, and why would it? Why would the fit be so good? Now there are some ideas that were discussed here some about a month ago by Gregory Eyeing, and so maybe these can be applied to explain, but I don't think this is done for the compressible case, and it would be nice to obtain this 0.3 or 1/3 maybe exponent from theoretical considerations. So this is my summary. So we have seen that many diagnostics depend only weakly on magnetic effects, and magnetic pressure and dynamic pressure dominate in the ISM, as we can observe. While there is a tendency to global equipartition of energies, so magnetic energy is about the same as the kinetic energy, there is no detailed scale by scale energy balance exists. Kinetic energy always dominates on small scales, and because of that, molecular clouds are born superalphinic, while warm neutral medium and warm ionized medium are subalphinic. And in models with large uniform fields, strong magnetic tension suppresses three-dimensional compressions and reduces the level of magnetic fluctuations. Thank you.
Thank you.
The scale 0.3 is for relatively weak uniform field.
These two cases show weaker fields, correspond to weaker fields. The stronger ones give you 0.33. I didn't want to show it.
You try to keep somehow the length scale of the magnetic field. It also looks like nice.
The left?
Yeah.
Oh, the left part is it's just because you measure the absolute value. It's the sum of three squares, and I think it has a non-physical origin. It's just it depends on what you plot on the x-axis.
that's important because that's where the start
point. Yes, that's right. This is the key thing here, because there are theories that assume that stars are forming by bipolar drift. This is, you have a very dense core threaded by the magnetic field, and this core is ready to collapse, but magnetic field holds it. And you need to wait the magnetic field line diffusion time to allow it to collapse. What we show here is that that model is probably probably has some severe problems because it doesn't include turbulence. And so there is a big debate in astrophysics, and there are two different camps. Yes, absolutely. So, yeah. So this turbulence changes the picture dramatically. And as Hans Lippmann from Caltech used to say, turbulence is a graveyard of theories.
Any more questions?
Thank you.